Small Business and Startup Stories DSM features conversations with small business owners who share both their victories and failures on their path to success. Small Business and Startup Stories DSM is produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. More tips and resources are available at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. I'm your host, Mike Caldwell.
Kyle McMahon, welcome to Startup Stories. How does a graduate in landscape architecture get into the ag startup world?
It's funny you ask that. So it kind of goes back to growing up. I had a lawn mowing business that turned into more than just mowing lawns. And I played a lot of competitive golf.
Okay.
So I played in the Callaway Junior Tour, a tour kind of all around the Midwest when I was under 16 years old. Still not good enough to play at a really good D1 school and got golf, and decided, well, I want to be in golf one way or shape or form. So yeah. Iowa State was local. My brother played football at Iowa State. So okay. Let's go to Iowa State and get a landscape architecture's degree so I can build golf courses.
And play golf.
And play golf.
Did you play on their team?
I did not play on the team at Iowa State. Okay. And I recognized that being a landscape architect isn't about playing golf.
Yeah, well, that's probably
you're
true.
Sitting behind AutoCAD, and I actually quickly learned that I didn't want to be sitting in front of a computer the rest of my life at the time.
Yeah, no, I understand. So you minored in entrepreneurship studies at ISU. Did you always want to be an entrepreneur? Did you always have that in your mind?
Yeah, so that was actually a really good turning point in kind of my decision of what I wanted to do after school. Mm-hmm. And so, as I'd mentioned, I'd run a lawn and landscaping business that my best friend and I took to about $100,000 in revenue just as a
How old were you when you did that?
Well, I started like when I was 12, right?
Nice.
Driving lawnmower from yard to yard. And then in college, we had turned it into a couple employee business.
Okay, so you're doing this in college as well. Because
yes.
I knew you have that on your LinkedIn, which I think is a hoot. Because it was pre-college time as well, which I thought that was great. Good for you.
Yeah, so
it
we started
there.
Really young. And started growing that. And I was in Ames. He was back home in Southeast Iowa, Fairfield. Yeah. So I ended up selling my half of the business to him.
Okay.
He was spending way more time and I was kind of focused on college. But really the entrepreneurial studies. So I'm a third generation entrepreneur, if you will.
Oh,
so
okay.
My grandfather's what I would probably consider a true entrepreneur, where he started many businesses and failed many times.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then finally ended up purchasing a business in Keosauqua, Iowa, Southeast Iowa, small town.
Yep.
I think they had 4 employees at the time. And then after college, my dad and 2 of his brothers came back to the family business and ended up taking it from about 4 employees to 750 employees.
Wow. What was that business?
It was called Barker Company.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made refrigeration equipment for supermarkets.
Oh,
so
okay.
All around the United States and Europe
wow.
is where their primary markets were. So dinner time table and talk wasn't, you know, how was school? It was, these are the customers I'm chasing. These are the new products right. we're unleashing. Here's, so it's just, I kind of grew up around it.
Here's the engineering challenges I have and the distribution challenges I have.
And naturally I had a great mentor kind of through that. Even though you're young, you start to pick up on
that. Is that business still going?
It is. They actually sold it to a publicly traded company in 2009.
Yeah.
To a company called Dover.
Yep. All right. Well, that makes sense.
And it's still there in operation and growing as ever.
And still in that town.
Yes.
That's good, because not all of them, when they get sold like that,
Correct.
Hang around.
That was actually a stipulation of the contract.
Really?
The business had to stay there because it's in, you know, rural Iowa.
It's people's lives.
A ton of jobs.
Yeah, it is.
So it was in Keosauqua, Iowa, as well as Centerville.
Yeah.
And so through the entrepreneurial side, the minor is what really kind of got me into wanting to be part of more and attending the Okoboji Entrepreneur Institute and kind of started learning more about that side of
what was that institute like? What'd they do there? Because I'm familiar with it, but I've never really understood the whole deal.
Oh man, it's great, especially as a college student. You go to Lake Okoboji for a week, you get 3 credits during the summer.
Oh, nice.
And you get to listen to entrepreneurs' stories, you know,
really?
Successes and failures.
Wow.
And it's just an awesome opportunity. I'd encourage everybody to go.
Nice. So I assume that the lawn care business was the very first business you started.
Correct.
Given you did this at 12, but I've got to ask. So were there any other businesses you started along the way before Tractor Zoom?
You know, there weren't. I've always kind of had the mindset of thinking of products of, hey, I always have this challenge mm-hmm. of many times in my hobbies mm-hmm. and how can we solve the challenge? But you start to look into the market and it's just a really small niche market.
Right.
And so never actually pursued any of them. My cousin and I were going, we were getting ready to start a business, but each of us had our careers at the time. This is after college.
Yeah.
Didn't end up pursuing it. It would have been custom clothing
yeah.
for outdoors people, whether they're right. skiing, snowboarding, or hunting or fishing.
Okay. Well, and at least you have the benefit of having a mentor that understood having physical goods inventory, because a lot of people in the software game don't understand the cash flow disaster that growth is. The faster you grow, the bigger cash flow problem you have. And it's just such a, you know, inverse to what people would normally think. Oh, you're growing. You must be doing great. It's like, no, I'm running out of money.
You know, I guess I can learn from you on that, because I don't have that. I guess we've never had that problem.
Your dad didn't. Obviously, got that worked out long mm-hmm. before. So at first glance, TractorZoom looks like, quote, another auction site. Is it?
It is not.
Okay.
So we what TractorZoom is we advertise farm equipment auctions. Mm. So we're not an eBay where we're on the point of transaction. We're more like an Auto Trader or a Zillow.
Makes sense.
Where consumers advertise equipment on there.
All right.
We line up the buyers. The buyer finds it, and then they purchase that piece of equipment on a different website, an online auction site, or in person at the
So you're not taking a piece of the sale. You're just taking the ad and making the connection.
Okay. Correct. And by us being on that side of the auction market, it allows us to scale more quickly and create a really in-depth dual-sided marketplace using network effects, right. bringing buyers and sellers together and scaling more quickly than we could if we were an auction company.
Right, because then you have to compete against every other auction company that's already out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's an article in Successful Farming about how the company came to be, and the story goes that you were looking for Kinsey, I think is the way I say it, Kinsey Planter, and found the process painful. Is there more to that story?
Yeah. So I was working in private equity when this kind of idea came to me. And I've always been an idea guy and always mm-hmm. looked into them, but never really did anything. But this opportunity to start what is now TractorZoom and Iron Comps really stood out to me. So I knew the auction market extremely well. Mm-hmm. In 4 years of working at this private equity fund in Northern Iowa, where I was buying and selling farmland,
yeah,
I attended more than 1,000 farmland machinery auctions.
Oh my gosh.
So 4 years, 260, 265 days a year. I mean, you're hitting four.
You're living at the auctions.
Yeah.
Oh, how'd you keep your weight down? Because that's like bad food, bad drinks.
Oh man. You know, I found that if you eat a lot of beef jerky and then you drink water, you can't drink too much salt.
Right.
That you can get by on those road trips. Okay.
So a couple hundred of those a year.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So you really got to know the business.
So I got to know the business, and more importantly, I got to know the auction companies.
Sure.
And so by developing really deep relationships with many of them, mm-hmm. And then starting to, so I didn't grow up on a farm, but I wanted to farm at some
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
And the time was about right. And so I started looking at planters and figure out mm-hmm. all the equipment I need to purchase. And I said, hey, I know the auction market better than most.
You've got the experience.
And I'm going to go buy a planter at auction because I think I can get the best bang for my buck there. Best sure. value, especially if I shop. And
right.
And so through that process, I ended up subscribing to newspapers, bookmarking dozens of different auction pages, yep. auction sites. And that's just a nightmare. It's like I can't be the only one that had the problem of trying to find that one piece of equipment that was right for you.
Yeah, so there was no national market.
Right. There was no online database of, like, you know, we're all used to cars.com, yeah. Auto Trader,
right,
Zillow.
Exactly.
So just the hey, marketplace.
There's national marketplaces for third party parts. I mean, what used to be called a salvage yard.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? That's a $1 billion market.
And so, yeah, the auction farm machinery market is somewhat niche. There's about yeah. $4 billion of agriculture equipment that trades at auction per year.
Okay.
And $15 billion of agriculture, construction, and transportation equipment mm-hmm. that trades at auction per year.
Sure.
And naturally, we sat back and said, okay, how do we want to make money at this?
Right.
And
yeah, the important point.
Yeah,
how do we make money?
And so that kind of started. I remember like it was yesterday. I just saddled up, threw my snowmobile in the back of my truck and drove the 12 hours it takes to get from here to Centennial, Wyoming
yep.
to go on a snowmobile trip. I was by myself driving all night long. And so it was just the perfect time to stew on the idea.
Interesting. So before we get too much more into that, you mentioned in the in an article that auctioneers were spending about 75% of their advertising budget on print, while 75% of their buyers were looking online. This really struck me. That's an amazing mismatch, but it's not surprising because the auto industry, you mentioned Auto Trader, they all went through the same thing. Was that just obvious to you from the start, or did it take a while? I mean, was it just that instance where you said, I'm going to go start farming, or was there more to it behind that?
So when I found that stat through research, that was astonishing to me.
So that's actually a research-based piece.
Yeah.
Nice. Yep.
Farmequipment.com, a very reputable publication through Lester Media up in Wisconsin, actually came up with that.
Wow.
That study was back in 2017, I believe.
Just
so
in 17.
In 2017, the people advertising auctions were still in print.
Yep.
And naturally, I don't think it's obviously not the farmer's fault.
Right.
They're going to the easiest to use solution, and they're starting to adopt technology and smartphones.
Well, and the days of moving something nationally, I mean, the idea of going and getting something national, you know, driving a long way is, you know, driving up into Michigan somewhere, 12-hour drive. There was a time that was like, you would never do that. Well, today that's a lot easier.
Yeah.
And given the price of some of the stuff, well, if I buy it right, I'm 10 grand ahead of the market. I'll spend $1,000 driving up there and back with my rig and my trailer and fuel. That's not a big deal, right?
See, you get it. It's like you've done it before.
Well, I grew up in the car business and we move cars around all the time. So,
okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And so the other issue was auctioneers. I still don't believe it was their fault for not being able to get it online. They didn't have a platform.
Well, yeah, they're not going to build the technology out. And these are people that are, their knowledge base is the environment. That's what makes them good auctioneers.
Correct.
I mean, that's...
An auctioneer by trade is really good at marketing. They don't just call bids at the auction.
Right.
It's the months that lead up to that sale to make it successful.
Exactly.
And so... I went through kind of customer discovery and said, I called auctioneers and said, do you struggle with marketing? How do you find people online? And nearly everybody I called that I had relationships with, if you build it, I will come kind of thing.
Well, that's probably, if it made you feel a little better when you went into building, that you got that positive.
It was still very challenging leaving my private equity career to jump into software, of which I had no idea what I was doing.
So, tell us a little bit more about who your customers are and what your revenue streams are in detail. Because you talked about iron something there. If you mentioned iron.
Iron comps, yeah.
Tell us more.
So the best way to explain it from an analogy perspective is we're the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book of heavy machinery.
Oh, okay.
So when we say that, TractorZoom.com is the Auto Trader. Mm-hmm. And it allows buyers and sellers to connect. We can generate some advertising revenue based on CPM metrics and so forth from that site. But primarily what our focus is on now is using TractorZoom as a data aggregator that allows us, because equipment specifications of individual items and what they sell for is not public record like it is in real estate.
Okay.
So TractorZoom.com is that aggregator. It's the catalyst for us to be able to collect.
And there wasn't the Kelley Blue Books or NADA guide, guide.
There is, but there's challenges with them.
Okay. All right.
That we found through a lot of customer discovery. And so we carved out our niche of, hey, we can create the liquidation value, the auction value of this equipment, which is super important to many people.
Financiers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if I had to sell this today, what's it worth? Or in 30 days, what's it worth? Not the retail.
Right.
Value.
No, it's what
you probably know from the automotive business. There's MSRP, there's retail, there's liquidation.
And there's all kinds of wholesales, but I'll tell you the one that the dealers will talk about is a buy bid. So if somebody would walk into my brother's store or my dad's store and say, I'm trading in, and it's something esoteric. I don't know. It happened to him one day. Somebody came in and wanted to trade off an Audi A7 or S7, which is a really unique, expensive sedan. I think they cost $100,000 new. My brother's a Ford dealer, you know, in Hudson, Iowa. There's nobody going to walk in that store looking for an S7 Audi. Well, he could call an Audi dealer and say, I need a buy bid. And what that means is the dealer's committing to buy it at that price based on the description the dealer provides. And that's it. and it's a low ball, right? But you can get a check that day. Because if you're a dealer, you can't afford to put 50, 60,000 one piece of used inventory that you probably can't sell. So
yeah,
that was the value that mattered, was the buy bid.
So you get it.
Yeah.
So while we're continually scaling TractorZoom.com and still connecting buyers and sellers, auctioneers and farmers, mm-hmm. the best we can, it's a huge focus of ours. Through the process, we recognized, hey, we can, using the auction data, we can value equipment.
Yeah.
And so that was, okay, let's make sure we get all the information in. A lot of times we'll get listings of equipment that's kind of full of dirty data,
yeah.
misspellings, acronyms.
Sure.
So we actually had to develop some artificial intelligence and do some machine learning, some natural language processing to be able to organize that data along with human entry.
Because those, it isn't, if it's a 4430, it's not just a 4430 or whatever. I happen to know almost nothing about tractors, but.
Well, you know that model.
I know that model because I saw it on one of your web pages, I think. But the point is, I know tractors from the old days, and there were all kinds of, does it have a PTO? Does it have hydraulics? Is there something on the front of it? Is there, you know, a lift? Is there, because there's, and that stuff is expensive to change out.
It is.
So if it does happen to have the right, you know, if it's a front end loader on a tractor or it has the right PTO or the right hitch systems, that can be thousands of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the car market, an F-150 single cab work truck is a lot different than your fully loaded crew cab King Ranch.
Yes,
right?
It is.
So what we're able to do is we use some of that data and then we use it on iron comps to help primarily B2B enterprise customers value mm-hmm. equipment in real time through our SaaS solution. So we use our organized IP, so all the data, mm-hmm. proprietary data, and push it into iron comps, which we've wrapped it in easy to use SaaS solution. Mm-hmm. So think of a banker can log on, he banks 100 farmers.
Right.
He can go click on any one of those farmers, call it Farmer John, mm-hmm. and he can pull up his entire machinery list and see real-time values associated with
now,
it.
Now, do you allow the banker to actually build those inventories by farmer? Are they doing that on your site or they would do that separately?
There's a few ways. There's some intricacies to that.
Yeah.
Because what we found kind of a struggle is a lot of financial institutions, whether they're banks, insurance companies, anybody keeping a farmer's machinery list may not have it in the form we need it.
Sure.
Be able to match up data. So let's take your 4430, that John Deere 4430 you had mentioned a second ago.
Yeah.
In some cases, it says old green tractor.
Right.
Now, I can't tell you what the value of an old green tractor is.
Let's start at zero and we'll work our way up.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And so there's a little bit of an educational curve that we have to take to get that data organized. And we accept data through CSV uploaders, through API exchanges, and try to make it as easy as we can the customer.
But I can see the day changing where part of getting the next loan is the farmer delivering a very complete, accurate list of what they have for assets versus an old green tractor.
Yeah, especially in today's economy. Yeah. I mean, net farm income is down.
Right.
It's a little bit challenging to make some money in ag right now.
Right.
And so when that happens, you have compressed margins.
Sure.
It's not just the farmer trying to figure out how he gets the best deal when he buys equipment.
No.
The banker needs to seriously consider the collateral to support his loans.
Well, and on both sides, there's the business marginal situation where business is really in a bad place for that farmer. There's the other side that says, this is a really good lending opportunity. I didn't realize that those four pieces of equipment are worth $200,000. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more assets here than I thought. I mean, I think both sides exist, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I'd encourage you to tell all your bankers that because we see the value in that. Sometimes they don't. They're
bankers
a little bit
are
more
bankers.
Risk adverse.
Yeah. Well, it helps when they know there's a liquid market, though.
Correct.
You've got to. I would think you're making a big difference here because the unknown is a zero. The known, hey, there's not only is this worth 50,000, but we're selling 10 a week.
Yeah.
You know, the throughput of sales, you know, if you know there's always a market for this thing and it's a market, you know, 12 months a year. That's a lot better than, oh, you can only sell these in April or May because mm-hmm. they need them in the field in June and then they don't care.
Yeah. So when we match up our data analytics to kind of their customers' assets, we mm-hmm. can really give them a fine-tuned needle and brush to help them understand when to sell it, where to sell it, potentially what auction company to use, and the full gamut of a liquidation. However, banks don't historically liquidate.
No, they don't want to.
They'll figure it out with the farmer, and that's the way it should be.
Right.
So what our data will primarily help from a lending perspective is give them real insights instead of licking their finger, putting it in the wind, say, the farmer says it's worth $1 million. I'll put it on the balance sheet for $750,000.
Right. Well, and a lot of the people, I'm sure that in the ag banking space, some of them aren't farmers. You know, it used to be a lot of the ag bankers were people that had kind of aged out of farming. And they went to work at the bank to be a lending officer because they basically knew the business. They didn't know banking. That's changed.
It is. And granted, those people still exist, but the amount of knowledge you have to have in the equipment market to really understand late model equipment, is it a $150,000 tractor or is it a $225,000 tractor?
Well, just the computer system and the sensor suite on it can be a third of the value.
Yes, it can.
And that's only going to get more common as we see some of the things that are going on in ag.
Yeah. So the other really great thing we see is between the marketplace and Iron Comps is the ability to use real-time data for people to make actionable decisions based on data.
No doubt.
And there's just a lot of opportunity that we can do to continue improving on that data and giving people more prescriptive results.
Yeah. You mentioned you're using some AI and machine learning. I assume you're using off-the-shelf pieces of AI and machine learning. You're not building your own algorithms and such, or core pieces, are you?
We actually had to.
Really?
A lot of the natural language processing that we wanted to use off-the-shelf didn't work because of how many acronyms are in equipment. So John Deere, JD.
Right.
Case IH, CH a lot of times,
or
CIH. So we actually had to have a lot of hypotheticals, if-then statements put into natural language processing. And so honestly, it's still a learning battle. We recognize the challenges of trying to create that, that structure and that correct taxonomy around the equipment. But naturally, we put a lot of time and effort into that because, you know, as we mentioned before jumping on this podcast is, the amount of staff or the amount of potential employees that are available, especially in the Midwest, to work on technology it's a tight job market.
It's limited.
So how can we utilize technology to increase our own operational efficiencies and scalability?
Have you ever thought about that being a third segment of your business someday?
Potentially.
I know it's kind of out there, but you think about that. If you end up being the one that breaks the code on natural language as it relates to machinery, are you doing construction machinery now too?
Not yet. We're focused on our niche. We want to be successful in ag before we take it to construction.
Yeah.
But that's about a Q2 deal in 2020.
Yeah, because to me, that ability would have a lot of value. You know, Tej Davon and I went to an AI conference a couple of years ago when AI was just starting to peek out into the market. People were talking about it. And the thing that I took away that just astounded me is the same problem that we were trying to chase 25 years ago when we were seeing SAP and Oracle roll in. And AI, it's the same problem, clean data. And I walked out there laughing with Tej. I said, it's been 25 years and we're still cleansing data. Nothing has changed. So how have things changed with today's product from when you started?
Oh, man. When we started, there's so many efficiencies that we've been able to create and kind of the direction, the opportunities that we'd recognize by starting it. In the early days, it was, hey, we're going to advertise auctions. We're going to be an advertising company.
Sure.
And then, hey, if we're successful, maybe we'll have the opportunity to value equipment. And now we're a data company. There's a lot of endless opportunities, whether we're with utilizing that data, whether we're helping auctioneers, farmers, insurance companies, equipment dealers, utilizing the proprietary data we have. So that's been a really big kind of pivot for us is going from an advertising platform to a data business.
You know, I see a lot of angel pitches because my wife and I do a lot of angel investing, and you'll hear and we think we can sell the data too. And it's interesting how many, a few years down the road, our business is selling data. We have another business that makes some money or doesn't make money, but it's all about supporting the data set that we've now figured out how to monetize.
And figuring out how to monetize data is no easy feat.
It's not easy.
But I think through enough conversations and customer discovery with your customer segment, whoever they are, you can kind of hone in on what their needs are. So if you're taking care of those customers, we kind of feel the value of the data falling in there. And then always having upsells through SaaS.
Was that a pretty quick adaptation when a dealer would hear, I think about a dealer, it's taking trade-ins, when they'd hear about this source and they're like, yeah, or was it, oh, I don't know. I mean, what kind of conversation did that look like at first?
At first it was, are you sure you actually have that data?
Oh, okay.
And then when we showed them, their eyes kind of lit up and said, holy cow, when can I have it?
Oh, good.
And we're actually launching Iron Comps in about a week.
Really?
So, in November, we're launching it.
Okay. Yeah. Cause this podcast is going to probably run after you've launched
correct,
it.
But, correct.
So it'll be there.
Which is very timely, but, yeah.
Well, great. Glad to help.
So, you know, we don't know how quickly it's going to take off, but through all that feedback that we've gotten and yeah. all the beta testers we've had, we think we've built a pretty good solution to help them make those actual
well,
decisions.
I can tell you, if it's anything like the car business, and I think it's got to be, is getting the trade-in values right is everything.
Yeah.
Because you can lose, you screw up a trade-in value, you can lose $5,000-$10,000 on a car deal just in a blink. Mm-hmm. If you don't do a good inspection of the car or whatever, it's easy. And I can't imagine how much you could lose if you screw up the trade-in on a piece of expensive farm machinery.
Yeah, I mean, at 10% of asset value, you're talking a car, that's $3,000 to $5,000 at mm-hmm. $30,000 to $50,000 a piece. And mm-hmm. on farm equipment, you're looking at $20,000 to $30,000 bucks.
Yeah, no kidding.
So yeah, I mean, it's a super big issue within the dealers and making yeah. sure that they take a trade in at liquidation value
yep.
and then sell it for retail. Yep. That's where the margin is.
That's where they make their money. I mean, it's a lot of people don't realize new car sales as it is by itself doesn't make a lot of money. There's just no margin in cars. People laugh when I say, you know, they say, how do I get a car really cheap? I'm like, look, you know, offer a dealer $500-$600 total profit on the car, they'll take it. With the hopes they can sell you something in the finance office and do something with your trade and make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But that's the game.
Promise them your service.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and yeah, it's exactly right. So you raised a seed round of about $1 million in 2018. And correct me if I get this wrong, and about 1.5 additional this July this year.
Correct.
What was that experience like?
So we had raised, before we raised from true high net worth individuals and mm-hmm. venture capitalists, we'd done a small kind of friends and family, and mm-hmm. Fortunately, I have a good advisor, my father, who has built a business, understand what investors are looking for, right. and so forth. And it was, hey, Kyle, you go risk all your own hard-earned dollars at this first, and if you hit certain milestones, you know, we'll help you.
Yep.
And so we were successful very early on getting to our very early milestones.
Good.
Of getting the product to market, getting some users on. And so we had gotten a small family round
yep.
before we went out and raised more. And so that gave us about 6 months of burn with a very, very small team. And raising-
Define very small. 2, 3?
Zach Sandvig was my first hire in November 17. I had started this. I ran for 6 months by myself. So started this in May 17.
Yeah.
And then brought him on full time. And
that's a small team.
Yeah. So it was three of us.
Okay.
And then hired another employee in December of 2017.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty
cool. So back to the seed round.
Yeah.
It was challenging at the beginning. I can't tell you how many gigabytes of decks that I have on my computer. Because every time you present and then you recognize, oh, we didn't,
yep.
they didn't understand because we didn't present it right.
Mm-hmm.
So optimize. I mean, it was, we sat back and looked at it of, we're selling part of our business.
Yeah.
How we should treat this as a sale.
Yeah, absolutely.
So very seriously, not just, hey, you want to invest, you want to throw some dollars in. So we took it very seriously, lined up a lot of meetings, had some really great connections mm-hmm. to people that didn't invest, but they gave us some great feedback early on,
yep.
Which helped us kind of get the next investment. And we were able to secure some investment from some really great strategic investors that can help us as a value add. And then one main VC, Innova out of Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
Just some super great people that see a lot of ag tech, a lot of what's going on early stage and really understand sales.
That helps a lot. So can you tell me, did you do it as a note? Did you do it as a priced round? How did that work?
The first round, the $1 million seed round was a priced round.
Yep.
Naturally, it was the people who didn't invest that you should have done a convertible note. And then the next time we did a convertible note, it should have been a price round. So you'll never get it right.
You can't win that debate.
It's more or less figure out what's best for the business
yep.
and really figure out how you can protect, preserve, and increase existing shareholder value.
Yep.
And so that was the right thing for us to do at the time. We thought we had enough traction from the data aggregation side that we did a price round in the beginning, and then we did a convertible note to get us to the next big step, which is getting Iron Comps out the door. And,
okay.
And that's our big revenue driver.
All right. So you've built this team from the ground up. What's that process like, and what have you learned?
I feel like I have an education in HR and and headhunting, but it's very challenging. So you want to make sure you hire people that fit your culture, believe in your mission.
Yeah.
And early on, it can be challenging to ask somebody to leave their existing career to come to something that's not guaranteed at all.
Yeah, there's no guarantee.
More likely to fail than it is to succeed.
Yeah.
But you have enough conversations that people start to believe in what you're doing.
They get excited, don't they?
Yeah.
And if they don't get excited, you don't want them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And you always have to ask them the right questions. You know, one of the questions we always ask people before we hire them is, this is a critical hire for us. Mm-hmm. Do you believe you're the right person?
Yeah.
And that'll usually have them tell you yes or no, because they'll either get scared and say, no, I don't think so. Or yeah, let's go. In.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned culture. How would you describe the culture of Tractor Zoom?
I would really describe a culture of people that are willing to take a risk, like to have a lot of fun and see the vision of what we can do. You know, we're not your typical 9-to-5. I always focus on hiring people that are better than me on specific areas of business, whether it's marketing, finance, engineering.
Yep.
I want to build a team around Tractor Zoom that really is an expert in each of those various topics, if you will.
Yeah.
And to me, that starts to put a umbrella around Tractor Zoom of really high performing team.
Yep.
And not just somebody that can do it, but somebody that will do it and will figure it out, because there's so much that we don't know.
Yeah. And you've got to figure it out in a reasonable time frame, even though figuring it out today may not be the end result.
Yeah.
Two years from now. Right.
Yeah. And to the classic startup, you know, we like to have fun. There's happy hours every once in a while.
Yep.
But I think you have to have that, and you really celebrate the small wins.
Yeah.
Because there could be a big win someday.
Yeah, you got to celebrate the small ones. So what's next beyond Iron Comps? What's next for Tractor Zoom?
It's keeping our nose to the grindstone on Tractor Zoom and Iron Comps,
yep,
and recognizing the opportunity that we have with being a data provider. We see so much opportunity in what we're doing, but the kind of the nutshell of where we want to go of Tractor Zoom is making sure we're connecting buyers and sellers first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then starting to recognize what we can do from Iron Comps and helping people value equipment in real time. And just using leveraging existing data and future data that we'll have to keep creating those actionable decisions and helping that in real time.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, Kyle McMahon, thank you for being on Startup Stories.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. Thanks for listening.